Tuned into Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio. Live from the Line Hotel in Washington, D.C., you're listening to The Tidbit, brought to you by Curate. I'm your host and the CEO of Curate, Kim Bryden. Do you run a small business or have dreams to start one? Well, here at The Tidbit, we've got your back. Each week, we talk through tidbits of knowledge around starting or running a small business with a food and beverage lens. Did you know that this show is based off of our bi-weekly newsletter that we send out at Curate? It's called The Tidbit, of course, and in it, we discuss what we're reading, eating, drinking, listening to, and learning. Five quick morsels of information to get you in the know and on top of your game. So head over to curate.co, C-U-R-E-A-T-E.co, to sign up. And we are back. This is our third season here at the Line Hotel. Welcome, listener. If you're new to The Tidbit, here's a little digest. At the top of the show, we share one tidbit of what we're reading or learning, and then dive deeper into that tidbit of knowledge with our in-studio guests. So, I just finished reading The Art of Gathering by Priya Parker. Now, a lot of the times when I'm reading books or articles about ways to host gatherings, it tends to be very Martha Stewart, how to prep the crudité, five ways to make a centerpiece, etc. And what I love about this book is that the author is trained in the field of conflict resolution. Priya has worked on race relations on American college campuses and on peace processes in the Arab world, Southern Africa, and India. And with that lens in mind, this book really is quite intentional about how and why people gather. So here's a quick excerpt from the book. A category is not a purpose. Think back to the last several gatherings you hosted or attended, a networking event, a book club, a volunteer training. If I were to ask you or the host the purpose behind each of these gatherings, I wouldn't be surprised to hear what I often do in my work, what you are supposed to do at the gathering. That networking night, you might tell me, was intended to help people in similar fields meet one another. The book club was organized to get us to read a book together. The volunteer training was arranged to train the other volunteers. The purpose of your church's small group was to allow church members to meet in smaller groups. This is the circular logic that guides the planning of many of our gatherings. So what's wrong with that, you might say? Isn't the purpose of a networking night to network? Yes, to a point, but if that's all it is, it will likely proceed like so many other networking nights. People wandering around and awkwardly passing out their business cards, practicing their elevator pitches with anyone who has a pulse and who will listen. It will not dazzle anyone. It may even make some guests feel awkward or insecure and swear off future networking nights. When we don't examine the deeper assumptions behind why we gather, we end up skipping too quickly to replicating old formats of gathering, and we forgo the possibilities of creating something memorable and even transformative. For example, in planning that networking night, what if the organizers paused to ask questions like these? Is our purpose for this gathering to help people find business partners or clients? Is the purpose to help guests sell their wares or to get advice on the weaker parts of their product? Is the purpose of the night to help as many people from different fields make as many new connections as possible? Or to build a tribe that would want to meet again? The answers to these questions should lead to very different formats of an evening. And when we gather, we often make the mistake of conflating category with purpose. We outsource our decisions and our assumptions about our gatherings to people, formats, and contexts that are not our own. And we get lulled into the false belief that knowing the category of the gathering, the board meeting, the workshop, the birthday party, will be instructive to designing it. But when we often choose the template and the activities and structure that go along with it, before we are clear on our purpose. Wow, this is truly an important point to remember. A category is not a purpose. And we talk a lot about this on the show, and especially in our small business workshops. why you do what you do matters. And today we're drawing on threads from The Art of Gathering and sort of doubling down on our theme of experience design from creating these Instagrammable food moments that we discussed on last week's episode to now setting the table and ambiance for truly memorable catering experiences. In 1986, Occasions Caterers started in a tiny apartment with just a few printed business cards and a small van, and they gradually built a team of executives, chefs, captains, and waiters who were also committed to the co-founders, who, fun fact, happened to also be twin brothers, vision. And fast forward 30 years later, and Occasions has indeed grown, but the focus remains the same, a boutique approach to full-service catering with a focus on custom menus, creative decor, expert planning, and gracious service. I am very excited to say that we are joined in studio today with the co-founder himself, Eric Michael, co-founder and creative director of Occasions, and Matt Zappala, VP of Business Development and Client Relations. We are going to take a quick break and then dive into their insights. Listening to The Tidbit, and we're here with Eric Michael, co-founder and creative director of Occasions, and Matt Zappala, VP of Business Development and Client Relations. Hello, both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Well, Eric, I think we're going to start with you. You have been in business for more than 30 years and have seen all of the food and beverage trends firsthand. And as you know, increasing consumer demand for local products is one of the most recent, and let me be transparent here. It's also one of my fan favorite topics to discuss. So I'm wondering, how has this movement around local small business materialized in the catering and events world? And even more specifically, how has it affected you at Occasions when you're conceptualizing and sourcing your events?
Well, when I started 30 years ago, local wasn't something we talked about. It wasn't, frankly, even available. So I've been a district resident for 35 years, and the only farm market back in the early 80s was Eastern Market. There was no place to shop locally, even if one wanted to. So there's been an evolution or a confluence of both demand and supply. Mm. And the demand, I think, has brought suppliers out, and vice versa. So it's come from both sides. The supply is the amazing part of it, that we have local producers, farmers, cheesemakers, bakers, and what we do is connect the two. And it's been fundamental to the growth of our company and to our brand. Food is our main focus. We do lots of things in a catering business, but food is really our core focus, and great food, delicious food, local food is incredibly important. So it's shaped our menus, it's shaped how we design our events, and it has I think changed the dining scene for catering and for the event industry in DC.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm just wondering if we could peel back those layers a bit more to see that magic that happens in your kitchen. I mean, when your chefs are thinking about local ingredients, how are they putting together or preparing a menu? And maybe, Matt, you might have some other insights on the business development side. When someone comes to you with an experience they're trying to create, how might local sourcing factor into that magic?
Sure. Well, quite often, you know, we'll get people that are requesting things that could be coming from either different parts of the world, or if they want to make it focused in D.C., we try to keep it seasonally appropriate. So right now, things like heirloom tomatoes, they're super popular and they're still in season, will be throughout the beginning of October. So really taking things like that and making it appeal to the masses. So we can do events from all different scales, different guest counts, and really just making sure that we're taking these ingredients and modifying them and making them into something that is definitely appealing for everyone.
What is that range? What is sort of your smaller size and then the cap?
We've done a dinner for two.
Oh.
And I think our largest is about 2,500 to 3,000 people.
Yep. Wow. Yep. Yeah, that's incredible. Yep. And I imagine on a day-to-day basis, you are figuring out how are my menus transitioning from that smaller gathering to that larger setting, because you have to buy on economies of scale in some regard.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, sometimes it's appropriate to do things on the smaller scale, but then when you are doing things for larger groups, you know, making sure that the sources that you're gathering these things from are appropriate.
Right, right. I mean, it all matters into that final menu preparation. You have to factor in all of the bespoke boutique ingredients with the maybe some more standard menu items. And I'm thinking too, you know, as this larger business that prides yourself on that boutique full service approach, clients that do want to bring that local flair, whether it's local to DC or elsewhere, maybe it's something they've requested about their hometown. I'm wondering if there's a particular experience you've had that was maybe the most memorable or challenging. Memorable can also be challenging, that you've received, and how were you able to pull it off? What could you sort of paint the picture of a time that you really were really proud of yourself, maybe, of how you've designed this experience?
Sure. We get asked this quite a bit. I mean, we're in Washington, D.C. with embassies galore. Mm. Just recently we did the Phillips Collection Gala. We've been honored to cater that affair for many years now. They usually pick a host country, and it was Australia this past year. So mm-hmm. that was a lot of fun, just coming up with new ideas to bring Australia to their guests, but also sourcing things, you know, as far as we can locally to, mm-hmm. that enforces that as well.
What is Australian cuisine?
Oh, well, I mean, it's Eric can probably tell us a little more.
Australia, like the United States, is a gathering of many, many cultures. And of course, the major influences are Southeast Asian. There is some native cuisine, European undertones. Mm-hmm. But they have some great ingredients that were new for us and new for the guests. Australian finger limes, for instance, are a type of citrus that are just coming to market now. And they call it citrus caviar. The little vesicles, they call them, pop in your mouth and burst with a lime flavor. So we created a Tasmanian salad using different bush herbs, which is what they refer to them in Australia, with Australian cheeses and a cured Australian fish and finger limes. So it's
wow.
So sometimes local is not local here. Sometimes local is bringing in a very authentic international experience. As Matt said, we work with a lot of embassies. They'll often help us import things that we might not be able to otherwise. We're so fortunate that DC has a wealth of resources for exotic ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
But on the opposite end of the spectrum, sometimes local is truly local. And just this past year, I had a great privilege of helping with a wedding celebration for clients and also good friends. And we started quite early, and we decided to plant a garden and grow the food for the wedding.
Wow.
So that's the ultimate in local. We designed a menu. We researched heirloom seed companies. We got their gardener involved. We tilled the ground.
Beautiful.
We timed out the planting to make sure that we'd have the crops in just the right amount of time. And we also made it beautiful. It was an experience for the guests to walk through the garden. And then we harvested heirloom carrots and unusual cucumbers, lots of herbs, tomatoes, pole beans. And we were able to serve those proudly grown on the farm for the guests.
Wow. I mean, a small business owner, if you are listening right now and are thinking to yourself, how do I build a business that's going to last 30 years? You just heard it. I mean, that is incredible. What boutique full service approach.
Yes.
That is just wonderful. And to your point about sourcing locally, not always truly, within the DC metro region, for example. I often think about how are we supporting small businesses globally, right? You didn't source necessarily from the major Cisco US Foods, right? You identified other small business local producers in order to source from. And I think as small businesses here are trying to expand their footprints, I'm a big proponent of regional ecosystems. How can we grow a business from Richmond to Philly? How are we growing businesses between Cincinnati, Louisville, Indianapolis, right? What are these little clusters? And if you can't get something from DC proper, maybe it just actually doesn't grow here. Is there a way in which we can see sourcing from small business as the proxy in which we can do business, as opposed to always just by de facto going to these larger distributors? So thank you for calling that out, because I think even if you are creating an experience that requires globally sourced ingredients, you can still be very intentional about your purchasing dollars. So cool. I really want some of those, that lime zest popping in my mouth now. And so I wonder too, from this catering event perspective, what does this everything local movement mean in terms of new business opportunities for that local small business? I just made the statement, if you're listening, small business owner, you should really pay attention to what these amazing gentlemen have just said. But I'm wondering from you as this buyer, you mentioned you're in this unique position of being the connector between the end client and also those suppliers that you work with. How can these small business owners ensure that they're on the radar of companies like yourself? Because they may want to get in on these amazing experiences.
Well, sure. We happen to come upon a lot of people in the food scene. Well, just because I'm a foodie, I think most people that work for occasions are foodies.
Oh yeah.
And take for instance, Nice Cream, which is a organization that's opening up in DC as well. The liquid nitrogen.
It's actually across the street from the Line Hotel right now.
Exactly. So we got to meet with them and understanding sort of their business model and how they want to expand their business, and us being able to strategically place them into an event. Mm. So, liquid nitrogen ice cream, it's a fun experience for guests. And, taking that to someplace like the Air and Space Museum where it fits thematically.
Ooh.
Is something that we would often do. So thinking about the entire event and where we can really wow the guests and also source it locally, that's something that's very important. So.
Oh, I love that. Is there anything that comes top of mind for you, Eric?
Well, so local isn't, of course, just produce. That's where it started, but we're now looking into working with local distilleries.
Mm.
This is we're frankly in a in my opinion of sort of a post green era where people are yes, they want it local, but what they really care about is artisanship and craft.
Mm.
And so when we're looking for opportunities for our customers and products for us to build into our menus, what we're really looking for is the very best. And there are amazing things being done in DC right now. So do things come to mind? We're building our bar packages now with locally made sodas, locally made, locally distilled liquors, of course, our local craft beer. It's a great way to bring a new element to the local experience.
I love this. And something that comes up for us a lot at Curate is a buyer may not source just based on that end product, but like you're saying, the artisanship or storytelling or the person behind who's producing that product. So a lot of times we get questions around, I want to source only from women-owned businesses, or I want to source only from people of color-owned businesses, or it may be even a deeper dive into a certain values-based system. For example, maybe you're a nonprofit that's working on criminal justice reform and you want to be sourcing from individuals who are returning citizens. So it's really interesting to me that you bring this up because, again, I think people are expanding their horizon as to what local sourcing means. It's not just farms to tables, but also how are we empowering and creating that interpersonal relationship between our suppliers. People like to know the face and the story behind who's making that good. That's amazing. So we are going to take a quick break here, and then we'll be right back with Eric Michael and Matt Cipolla. You're listening to The Tidbit live at the Line Hotel in Washington, D.C. We're here with Eric Michael, co-founder and creative director of Occasions, and Matt Cipolla, VP of Business Development and Client Relations. Matt, you recently transitioned to business development from a long career as an account executive. And so can you tell us a little bit more about the importance of your food and beverage vendor relationships, executing against client requests and expectations? This is something I would love your advice on. And when you're going into a new business meeting or putting together a proposal, how important are those relationships in enabling you to put your most creative and competitive foot forward? So one, on that vendor or client relationship standpoint, and then two, how do you make sure you're always bringing your most creative self to the table?
Sure. Well, it's been over 16 years since I've been working for Occasions. I started out actually working with Eric as his assistant.
Wow.
Yes. And I felt that it was appropriate for me to make a transition into something new with the company. And what I've learned through the years is that, we're often the general contractors for individuals that want to hold an event. And so going back to the book that you just read, one of the things that I generally would ask my clients is, what's the message, or what do you want to evoke from this event? What do you want to, what's your purpose?
Yeah.
And listening to them and knowing what to suggest, what to do. And sometimes it's actually taking a very hard topic or tools. I just recently did an event with Craftsman Tools, which is rebranding and moving their offices to Baltimore, Maryland. Mm. And centering food around tools is, as you can probably imagine,
a unique opportunity.
Yes, exactly. So having a lot of fun and knowing who to work with thinking hard about, what can we do with tools to make it, of course, fun and interesting, because you want your guests to walk away with a memorable experience. So
did they machete a carrot? No, I'm just kidding.
But what we did do is we drilled some milkshakes. We did some fun hammering of bark. So that was some fun things that the guests got to do in their in total experience. Mm-hmm. But also knowing which vendors you can team up with to really put on the show for the guests. And you want to make sure that you're working with somebody that you trust and somebody you've worked with over the years, understanding how they work, they understand how we work. And then in the end, you'd want to make sure that your client is happy. So, and that everybody across the board understands the purpose for the event.
Right, right. Oh, I love that. And I think too, this is my little soapbox moment. I think business at times can seem almost always transactional. And what I love about both of you and the business you've built is that it is so much about the relationships and the connections that you've been building with your suppliers and also then your end user, that client. And it seems like you're really thoughtful and intentional about that relationship.
Absolutely. I mean, it's what keeps us going.
Right.
Every day.
Yeah, absolutely. And Eric, I mean, you started out as a small business owner. You started this from, what was it? A few business cards in a small van.
Two guys in an apartment.
Two guys in an apartment. So for our newer entrepreneurs out there, how have you managed to grow at such a large scale while staying true to your mission and core values, especially with this boutique approach? I mean, I love that example about the garden and the wedding, but any advice you have?
Well, I can only speak for myself and say that we work one party at a time. And that's always been our goal, is to create each and every experience uniquely, and to have that be purposeful and beautiful and collaborative with a customer. So when Mark and I started growing and bringing more staff on, we decided to call our company Occasions Caterers with an S, and that was on purpose because we are a collaborative, and the boutique approach is maintained by having teams of incredibly talented individuals who each focus on their customers and their experiences and their projects, and we operate as really a collective. So Matt was a salesperson with us for 15 years before moving into business development, and as an account representative, Matt would only focus on his clients and his event that day, and we have invested in support for our team to be able to have the resources, but to keep it very, very personal. And I would say for us, investment in talent is everything. Culinary sure. talent and event planning talent. That's without a team, we're just two guys in an apartment.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And this is something that comes up a lot, as you can imagine, with emerging entrepreneurs, is when they start moving away from I'm myself in my apartment and I'm growing my business. Hiring those first few individuals who are in that mission and values alignment, it's extremely hard. And now you've been able to build a business 30 years later by finding amazing people like Matt here, who really live and breathe your values. Is there any words of wisdom you have around hiring or even finding people to believe in what you believe?
Well, one of the wonderful things about catering and working with such a large client base is that there are a vast variety of tastes. And so we've built our business by allowing for diversity. Mm-hmm. And we look for and invest in differences rather than sameness. If everybody was a mini-me, then we'd be really limited. So we love the individual approach that our staff bring to each and every experience and to their customers. And in doing so, we can appeal to a much wider audience.
Amazing. And you are from the Baltimore area. And then also, obviously, you said you've been a district resident for 36 years.
I am indeed. I grew up in Baltimore and came to school at Georgetown and took a job as a caterer working evenings. That's how I do what I do.
Oh, my goodness. Well, talk about locally grown business through and through. I just thank you both so much for your time and expertise. If anyone wants to find out more about your business, where can they find you?
Well, lots of places. and getting back to your earlier question about how do we connect with small businesses,
yeah.
We love calls and inquiries from producers. It's mm-hmm. it's vital for us to stay current and to understand what's being offered. So through our website, mm-hmm. by phone, tap us on the shoulder at an event.
All the social media.
We've Instagram's become a huge resource for us and a way to connect with both customers and also producers.
Amazing. And you know, as we sort of think forward, I'm wondering what is next for Occasions Caterers. Is there a certain innovation you're trying to incorporate into the business or certain channels that you're looking forward to exploring in the near future? What can we expect from your business growth?
Sure. Well, we are definitely looking at the technology and how we can utilize that. You know, back when I first started, a lot of, you know, either handwritten orders or communicating by, you know, walking down, seeing somebody in their office, communicating that way. Now we're moving into the digital age even further with
For sure.
communication at our events so that we can keep track of what's going on. So it's fresh in your mind. So if we are executing something at an event, we ask our captains and our lead people to document and let us know right away. So done digitally through our apps and our phones, mm-hmm. So that we have that information firsthand right away. It helps us actually improve our experience for our guests.
Oh, I'm sure. I mean, technology as an arbiter of efficiency and transparency It's like now that our phones are our third limbs, it's not that technology is weird anymore. It's just the norm. So how can we use that to create even more memorable experiences?
Exactly.
That's very cool. Is there anything you'd like to share, Eric? What do you see for the next 30 years, maybe?
Well, that's the exciting part about it. We, I frankly don't know what's on the horizon, but we've always embraced innovation. That's one of our core values at our company. And we are looking for ways to both improve our product through new processes, kitchen gadgets, and fascinating new ways to create food, but also to connect to our customers. And I think that's really the biggest change is exposure to what we're creating is done in real time. We have a research and development department, and as we're testing recipes, we're actually pushing those out live so people can see the process in real time of us concocting new drinks, new hors d'oeuvres, and it's there's a great feedback loop. We get instant gratification and encouragement from customers, and they get to see what we're doing even as we're doing it.
Yeah, and that immediate market research, because why put something on the menu and then someone's going to say, this is the worst, right? And so you've been able to engage customers even in the R&D process. And again, small business owner, if you're listening, I really encourage you to take all of these tips and pieces of advice, tidbits of knowledge, if you will, into your building your own business strategy. Again, as we say on each show, if you have any topics that you'd like us to discuss around starting a small business with a food and beverage lens, let us know. Head over to curate.co, curate.co, and say hello. So until next time, everyone, remember to scale thoughtfully and source locally.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.